Coming up, Lav and I recap the best of Charlie Woods and, you know, the other guy he played with at the PNC Championship last weekend. Welcome to Golf Central Podcast, brought to you by the new P770 from TaylorMade. Why practice a draw if you've got a fade? If you can hit it high, why master the stinger? Because the key to better golf is having options you can count on. That's why TaylorMade took everything they learned making P790, the forged face, the speed foam, and all its DNA and put it into a smaller package. Introducing P770, let the sibling rivalry begin. Available at your local golf retailer or TaylorMadeGolf.com. Use promo code GOLFCHANNEL for free 2-day shipping on any order. Lav, I was there at the PNC Championship. It was here in Orlando at the Ritz-Carlton Golf Club. I'm sure you watched breathlessly like everyone else around the globe, it seems like. I have two takeaways, and then I'll leave it to you to tell me how you felt about the whole exchange. One, Tiger Woods was a very reluctant competitor in this. You could tell from the absolute beginning that this was not his idea. This was Charlie's idea. This was Justin Thomas's idea. I'm guessing Mike Thomas, Justin's dad, had something to do with it. But Charlie pushed Tiger to do this because he never felt comfortable. And I'm going to talk more about that as we get into it. But on the course, he did all the things you would expect of a father playing in a really cool event with their son. They hugged, they high-fived, they smiled, they talked. It was really, really cool to see. That's my second point, is that Tiger Woods, the father, is an awesome guy. And it was, this was my column on Sunday night. It was an opportunity to see a side of Tiger Woods that I've never seen. I don't think any of us outside of that inner circle have ever seen. And for so long, the only vision we had of Tiger Woods was that through the competitive lens. It's what he did on the golf course. It was how he redefined the game with every single one of those victories. The door cracked open a little bit when he became a captain and a vice captain. We saw sort of another side of him. Last weekend, that's as enlightening as I've ever seen, because you saw someone that didn't care about their game, that didn't care about what they were doing on the golf course. His only existence for the entire tournament was to make sure Charlie enjoyed himself and that Charlie was protected and that he was inside his bubble and that he played the best golf he possibly could. And that, to me, was very endearing.
Yeah, I'll start with your second point first. And I thought you captured it really well in your column for golfchannel.com on Sunday night.
Is that my Christmas present early?
I think that was the only column of yours that I read the entire year. But I thought Tiger did strike the perfect balance between being a devoted and a doting dad and also not helicoptering and overly helping Charlie. And I think when we first saw that Tiger and Charlie Woods had signed up for the PNC Championship, I think we were all surprised by thinking, wow, you know, Tiger has been so protective of his family over the years. We've only started to see Charlie come out in recent years, whether it was 2018 Open Championship at Carnoustie, or of course he was behind the 18th green at the Masters in 2019. But other than that, you know, we've kind of only had these small glimpses into who Charlie Woods is. And so I think when Tiger and Charlie first signed up, we thought, wow, this is a surprise that the Tiger's even putting his family out there. And secondly, he must know something about Charlie Woods' game and his maturity that he was even going to be able to handle such a stage, because there was, what, maybe 100 people out there, but the ratings haven't come out yet. But I am sure that there are millions of people who watched this. And if they didn't watch the telecast on NBC and Golf Channel and Peacock, then they saw the clips on social media. So Tiger knew what was going to happen when he put his son out there. And I thought Charlie really conducted himself well. And I think Tiger as a father also showed pretty well, you know, the fact that he wasn't holding his hand throughout the competition. Charlie Woods knew exactly what he was doing. He conducted himself well. He looked like a little tour pro out there. And I thought it was really endearing just to see that side of Tiger, as you said. Now, the first part of your point, I think it's also worth exploring. The fact that Tiger didn't always look like he wanted to be there. I thought his interviews, and you were out there for all 4 days, his interviews were bizarre, to say the least. I thought a lot of his thoughts kind of trailed off at the end. He kind of bristled when a reporter asked him what Charlie Woods had on his bedroom wall, clearly fishing for an answer like Tiger had of Jack's major championship record. It just didn't seem like Tiger was going to play ball at all with us getting to know who Charlie Woods is as an 11-year-old kid.
To touch on your very last point, this was a very, very fun game that we played actually after that press conference. Name the funniest thing that Charlie Woods could possibly have on his wall. I picked Phil Mickelson's resume because I thought that would just be the funniest thing ever to do to your dad if he's Tiger Woods. But you can keep going. I mean, there's so many different options.
Rory, I mean, to me, it almost seemed like Charlie Woods was closer to a carbon copy of Rory when you look at the golf swing and the mannerisms than Tiger. There was a lot of Rory in that Charlie Woods swing.
There was a little bit of Rory. And I kind of joked, I think I did this on Saturday in a column, saying that Tiger Woods set up behind Charlie before every shot, before every putt. And it was, there was no coaching going on. I think it was more about alignment and just making sure it's, as Tiger calls it, the second set of eyes. And clearly Tiger is Charlie's second set of eyes. But I kind of joke saying that he was really just setting up to see what a smooth, pain-free golf swing looks like, because that's what you get at 11 years old. That, oh yeah, that's what it looks like when you haven't broken yourself in half and had to have 3,000 surgeries and you don't limp around 90% of the time. That's what it feels like to play golf. That must be fun.
Tiger did not look great. I think we can all admit this, right?
He did not. And I'll go back to that. And here's to your point, you said he knew what he was doing. I don't think, certainly as a father, as a doting father, as a protective father, he absolutely knew what he was doing. I don't think he thought it through what he was getting into. It was more than 100 people, at least on Saturday. It was probably around 500, to be honest with you, because it was anybody that played in the Pro-Am and their family. So not true spectators, but spectators nonetheless. I did not expect, and this was a conversation within media circles that always seems silly because we always get caught in our own little universe and no one really cares what we're dealing with. However, some guys thought that Charlie should have talked to the media alongside Tiger, like every other team does. I totally disagreed with that. He's 11
totally
years old.
I disagree with that as well, yeah.
I have a 16-year-old, I have a 17-year-old, and I have a 20-year-old. I don't want any of them talking to the media because I'm deathly afraid of what would come out of their mouth. So 11-year-old, absolutely not. However, when I went into that press conference on Thursday with Tiger, without Charlie around, after watching them play in a Pro-Am and getting a feel for it, I was excited. Because I really thought this is going to bring out a side of Tiger that we've never seen. He's going to be playful. He's going to be chatty. And you and I both know, because we both played by these same rules for a very, very long time, the family has always been off limits when it came to Tiger Woods. Privacy is just not the name of a yacht. This is something he lives by. And you do not touch the family. We've all understood that. And I can certainly respect that. However, you chose to bring your son into this limelight, and he just simply did not want to play along. And I get why he didn't want to say what was on Charlie's wall. I understand there's some sensitivities there. But every time, my question to him, which I thought was pretty innocent, was JT has referred to the idea that Charlie is every bit as competitive as you and that he has this exact same competitive edge that you do. How does that make you feel? He simply wouldn't play along. I'm not trying to dig into the family treasures here. I'm just trying to get him to talk about how much pride he has for his son, which should not be a problem. And he simply had no interest.
Yeah, he was very disinterested in speaking anecdotally about what his son is like, what his personality is. I mean, he was just leaving it to us as viewers to witness what we saw, report it, and that was going to be the beginning of the Charlie Woods legend. I think it's the exact opposite tact, of course, that Earl Woods took with Tiger. And so maybe Tiger learned from having his life in a fishbowl since he was age two and making television appearances, and his father Earl would wax on poetically about what Tiger could accomplish at a young age to any reporter who shoved a microphone in his face. I'm not sure if he was maybe protecting against that and maybe knowing from his own experience the dangers of overexploiting his son at such a young age, but I'm with you. If you're going to have a father-son tournament, I know it's not called the father-son anymore, but if you're going to have a tournament that is predominantly fathers and sons, what father doesn't want to talk about their son? And yet Tiger didn't do it at all.
Seriously, you have been boring me about dirty diaper stories with Cam for as long as he's been alive. I'm thinking 3 years now.
And they are dirty. They are really dirty.
Yeah. But I mean, it's what fathers do. So I was a little surprised by that. The other thing that surprised me, and I can say this with all honesty, within 15 minutes of us starting this taping, I received an email from, I don't know who, but some sort of betting house that has put Charlie as the 825-1 favorite to win a major in his lifetime. Now, you and I could play along and say which major is best suited for his game, but I'm not going to go down that stupid little road. What I'm getting at here is how breathless everyone was. And Mike Thomas, who...
But Tiger, you knew it was going to happen. You knew this was going to happen.
I knew it was going to happen. I do think it's a little silly. And I will say that as the, one of the handful of journalists that was lucky enough to be out there, that I think most of us struck the correct chord. That there was simply... You needed to keep everything realistically in place. And I would argue that there were entities that did not, specifically on social media, that went over the top. There is a Charlie Woods Tracker account that got started, which is ridiculous.
All right, R.I.P. Tiger Tracker.
Yes, R.I.P. Tiger Tracker. Moving on. I think the important thing that no one seemed to understand is how much Tiger just wanted to go out and enjoy his time with his son. He wasn't setting him up for, okay, here's your first taste of what tour golf's going to look like. I'm going to start training you to get you ready. That wasn't what this is about at all. He's 11 years old, and he's a small 11-year-old as well. And he played great, and it was fun to watch him. But the idea that you would tell anybody that, okay, he's 825-1 to win a major, it's just patently ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I also think Tiger had to have known that this was coming because he even alluded to it. I think it was on his Saturday press conference where he said that you guys are going to write what you want to write and you're going to build off of having Charlie so that Tiger wanted to be the main spokesperson for Team Woods. And I think that was totally understandable because Tiger has loathed the idea of others profiting off of him. That's why he's never participated in hardly any books written about him. He's never participating in any of these documentaries that have been done about him. Tiger loathes the idea of people making money and building off of his legend. And so that's why I think in a lot of respects that Tiger didn't want to play ball with some of the questions, and he wasn't going to feed into the beast that we knew that we wanted to paint this portrait of who Charlie is at 11 and what are his dreams and his interests and his passions and his desires that he wants to accomplish in this game. I think it's all ludicrous at this point. I do have to say, Rex, and you saw it firsthand, Charlie is a little bit better than I anticipated that he was going to be.
No, he was good. He was very, and I thought it was interesting. Tiger kind of talked a little bit. I guess he's had Mike Thomas, Justin Thomas's father, take a look at Charlie's swing from time to time. Just from a mechanical standpoint, I think he feels like he's at that age where he probably needs to get a little bit more feedback on that. And so I had a chance to talk with Mike about this. And the one thing that, well, the two things he pointed out as far as his swing goes is how much speed he generates. And he goes, not only is he 11, but he pointed out he's a really small 11-year-old, or he's a small 11-year-old, and that he's still able to generate a lot of speed. And from the tees he was playing, I thought it was absolutely hilarious that there was numerous times over the course of two rounds that Tiger Woods would let Charlie tee off first 120 yards ahead of him, and when he saw where the ball was, he simply kept walking. Tiger did not even put a peg in the ground.
I think – so, yes, obviously – there wasn't going to be much of a competitive advantage gained if Tiger hit his tee shot and he left himself 150 in when Charlie has just a little flip wedge left. I also think that was Tiger saving his back. And sure. And there was video of him on the range on Saturday where he just looked terrible. He made one swing that was maybe 50 miles an hour and he's grabbing his back and he's grimacing. I mean, Tiger did not look good. Charlie Woods carried that team. And made it so Tiger basically only had to hit. Yeah, he had some longer clubs on the par threes, but he was basically hitting drivers and he was basically hitting wedges for the entire way around. Yeah.
Well, and I did. That was kind of the last item I wanted to check on because, again, this is a 2-day silly season event. I don't want to blow it out too much, but the state of Tiger's game is very, very clear. He said it himself. He has not worked on his game since the Masters, and he has not had much interest in working on his game. He wants to shut it down. And to your point, especially on Saturday, there were a lot of uncomfortable moments where the internet seems to catch these things before anyone else. And about, is he grabbing his back? Is he hurt again? I don't think he's hurt again. I just think we've gone over this a million times. This is the status quo. There's going to be good days and bad days. Saturday was clearly a bad day. And you're right. If you can play your son's ball in a scramble format, by all means, go ahead.
Save that 150 mile an hour swing for another hole. Yeah,
it was still stark by comparison. But the one thing that I also found interesting, and we didn't get into this with Tiger for obvious reasons, the normal takeaway on Sundays is, Tiger, can you talk about what you can take from this week and move forward? What are you going to work on over the off season? When do you think we're going to see you again? None of those questions were asked. Because it is fascinating to me. Well, there was one question that was asked, and he never answered it. Was, what did he learn from this season that he can apply to next season? Didn't get a very good answer, so it's not even worth getting into. But it will be fascinating to see. I mean, let's all just say it's going to be Torrey Pines, because we know it's going to be Torrey Pines when he's going to play again. I don't think he's going to add to his schedule. I mean, we saw that this year, even with COVID and the pandemic and everything that went down. Number one, I don't think we can expect any greater level of consistency than we saw this year. And at that point, it's just math, is it not? I mean, if you're not going to add to your schedule, if you're not going to play 20 events in those percentage of numbers of weeks you're going to show up and you're going to be healthy and be able to compete, it remains the same. I just have a hard time thinking next season, okay, what week would we point to and say, yes, that's the week. I mean, of course, we all want to say April and Augusta National. I just don't see how the timing and all the stars line up on command like that.
Yeah, I think he basically needs to catch lightning in a bottle now in order to contend. And that's not being overly critical of him. I think that just underscores the nature of his injury, that some days he's going to wake up feeling spry and feeling like he's going to be, you know, he turns 45 next week, but a regular 45-year-old. And then there's some days he's going to wake up and he feels like he's 75. You know, that's just the nature of his back injury. So everything needs to align, not just him being able to feel good for 4 days, but he also needs to putt well and needs to drive it well. And he needs to have these players who are younger and better and stronger and fitter. He needs them to not play as well. So, I mean, everything needs to coalesce in order to have him have a winning week again. I do want to touch on something that was my main takeaway from the PNC. I agree with you. It was great to see the side of Tiger as a father, but I also think that Charlie Woods can now serve as Tiger's sole motivation. I think Tiger's given up on the idea of catching Jack Nicklaus. That's just not going to happen. That's pie in the sky stuff.
That's tough. All right.
That's pie in the sky stuff at this point. I think surpassing Sam Snead's record of 82 wins, Tiger's already tied it. I think that's just a product of good play, and he'll get there eventually. But I think Charlie, now that Charlie has this deeper passion for the game, that he clearly has the golf bug that bit him through the pandemic, and he's really gotten better. Now that they've spent some more time together, I think that Charlie can really push Tiger along, you know, and I said it's easy to imagine that on the plane ride home yesterday from playing in this tournament. Yeah, they were probably
you don't
both
think they drove to South Florida? You think they took the private jet, the 5-minute ride from Jupiter to Orlando?
I think they flew. Yes. But on the flight home, I think they'd both be buzzing over the experience and how much fun they had and some of the memories that they were able to create. But if Charlie is anything like his old man, you know that he's going to be stewing over some of the shots that they didn't hit or some of the putts that they missed or most importantly, the fact that they finished 5 shots behind. You know that that's going to eat at the Woods boys. And so
they finished 5 shots behind the Thomases. That's what's going to eat at Charlie specifically, because that dynamic between JT and Mike Thomas and Charlie Woods, the 11-year-old, is fascinating to me. I mean, him leaving a note during the pro-am when Charlie hits it through the fairway, draw hole, because he's in the woods, for Charlie to hang on to that note and to keep it until they're in the heat of competition and Mike puts it in a bunker and Charlie decides to put it underneath his ball, that to me is next level funny. That's next level just devious. And for an 11-year-old, I am tip of the hat, man. That's impressive.
It is impressive. I actually thought Justin Thomas comported himself really well last week too. He was obviously a great partner, a terrific golfer, as we all know. But I thought he was a great son to Mike Thomas. And I thought that Charlie Woods was almost like the younger brother that JT never had growing up. He's the only child. And I really like the dynamic that those two have together. But the point, Rex, you got me off the point. Sorry. Is that I think that Charlie can now be a reliable companion for Tiger in terms of pushing him and controlling him and needling him. Tiger's not going to want to let him down. You got to remember, just a couple years ago, Tiger said he wanted his kids to remember him as something more than a YouTube golfer. And that's why the Masters in 2019 was so special, because he got to share it with his kids, that triumph and that victory, because it showed him just how good he can be again. I think Charlie can help bring out the best in Tiger. I know he's not going to play very often, but I think he can just keep him active and keep him engaged for a little bit longer, as if, you know, maybe if Charlie had gotten deeper into soccer. The fact that Charlie is now an avid golfer, I think it can only help Tiger and just to keep him engaged a little bit longer.
And there was a spark. You could definitely see it. I mean, when those two are around each other, when they're on the range, the way Mike Thomas explained it to me is Charlie talks the language. Like, he may be 11 years old, but he knows what he's talking about. He talks that language that only Tiger, JT, and those alpha level players seem to talk. So he fits in perfectly with that crowd. All right, but before we move on, I did want to touch on and we podcast. We already kind of looked back at 2020, and we'll be happy to leave that in the rearview mirror. But before we get out of here, I wanted to see in 2021, and there's a couple of different options here. What are you looking forward to the most when we finally get out of this godforsaken year?
I think we're all looking forward to the eventual implementation of more fans. You know, the Phoenix Open right now has a situation. I think they're capping it at 8,000. And I think we all expect it to be loosened up a little bit more for the Florida Swing. I'm hoping by the time that we get to the major championships, there's at least some fan presence there. And I'm hoping, I don't think we'll have full capacity fans at all in 2021. I think the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits is the closest that we can get. By that point in late September, you would hope that obviously the vaccine rollout has been successful and at least half of the American public has been vaccinated and we're good to go. But I think we're all looking forward to having fans out there. You and I have covered a handful of events since the tour restart in June, and something was missing. You know, I think the golf was spectacular. The major champions and the winners of regular tournaments, they're not going to have any asterisk attached to their name or those tournaments. But I do think something was missing, and just having that energy and that atmosphere back is something that I'm most looking forward to in 2021, even if it isn't full capacity.
And it was interesting. The commissioner had a conference call, Jay Monahan, last week, and he was asked a lot about this, because obviously this is going to be something going into 2021 that you need to start setting some benchmarks. The West Coast does not look great, but he did talk about, as we get towards Florida, as we get towards the Florida Swing in March, and hopefully you get to areas where they're a little bit more open to having fans, where the vaccine might be a little bit more widespread used. I think all of these things are going to add to what he said was going to be a trend where we do get towards the end of the year, that we're not at 100%, but we're as close as possible. And that's why, like for me, And I could probably say this in every year, but the Ryder Cup is the one I'm looking forward to the most. I mean, because it seems like every year the Ryder Cup just gets better and better, and there's always these great storylines, and it's by far the most entertaining event in golf, simply because of it sort of transcends that golf crowd. It has moved into just a general sports. People show up because that's what they want to do. It's arena setting. There's thousands of fans. The intensity is very, very real. The pressure is very, very real. So for me, it's going to be, I know we're not going to be at full capacity, but just the idea that we have something close to that, that we have something close to that, that same vibe on property that we've been missing for, you know, this entire year. That to me is the one I've kind of put on the calendar that I'm looking forward to the most. And obviously the Olympics. I mean, that's the one that would be the second one for me.
Yeah. It seems like the excitement of the Olympics has kind of died down. I think everyone entering 2020 was really excited about the prospect. Boy, I mean, Tiger was right on the cutoff at that point. Now it's an absolute pipe dream that he's going to qualify for what would be a very stacked.
You are down American, in Tiger Woods in 2021. You're selling Tiger Woods in 2021. Like you're out of the business.
Oh, huh? hard sell.
Oh, wow.
Hard sell.
So like, I would never say this because I've gotten burned too many times. You don't think he's going to win again on the PGA Tour?
No, I think he's going to win again. No, I think he's going to win again on the PGA Tour. I'm not sure he's going to do it in 2021, but I think he can find lightning in a bottle once and eventually eclipse that record.
A major?
No.
I'm just going to press you here. No major? It's going to be Torrey Pines. It's going to be LA. That's what you think? Well, probably not LA since the record's not great.
It's not going to be LA. I don't think he wins next year, but I think he potentially, assuming his health is still good, I think he can win after that. It's just hard to see. I mean, forecasting Tiger has never been harder. A, the schedule is so limited, and B, you just don't know. It's all dependent on his body. I mean, you saw what Tiger was able to do at Augusta National. He handled himself pretty well through two rounds, and then he got to Saturday and needed to play 26 holes, and you could absolutely write him off. It didn't matter if he was in the lead. Didn't matter if he was two shots off the lead. Didn't matter if he was six back. You absolutely knew that Tiger Woods was not going to win the Masters because he had to play 26 holes on Saturday. You could absolutely write him off. And of course, that's exactly what happened.
You go back to that narrative quite a bit. You went to that narrative a lot in 2019. And actually, you can make an argument that
it's not a narrative if it's true.
Well, you were just fascinated on the idea that these early mornings and these late afternoons and these late nights are going to take a toll on the 40-something-year-old's body, and he's not going to be able to perform like he used to. Now, I see the logic where it's at. It just seems like you lean into this a little more and more every month that we talk about this.
I mean, you saw him at the PNC. We both saw him on Saturday.
Great.
He could barely get the ball out of the cup at the Masters on Saturday.
No, he didn't look great. I didn't expect him to look great. He doesn't play golf this time of year. This is when he shuts it down. This was clearly something different than what we've seen from him. And I will say, when we're sort of looking ahead to 2021, I am curious to see what he's going to look like. I mean, we're all assuming Torrey Pines. I am curious to see what he looks like, because again, when he goes through these cycles, the idea is he comes out the other end and he's somewhere close to being competitive. That doesn't work all the time, but I think more times than not, we have seen now that he can at least piece something together physically that allows his game to, if not win, to at least make a respectable showing. And that would be what I would expect more so than just showing up at Torrey Pines and looking like he did last week.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. You look at the major championship venues next year, they're pretty uninspiring. Obviously, Augusta National, nothing's changing there. But you have the PGA at Kiawa, U.S. Open returning to Torrey, the Open Championship at Royal St. George's. There's going to be so much attention focus on Tiger's return to Torrey for the first time since 08, but that's just not a good golf course for him anymore. I mean, those two just don't, they're just not compatible. A long golf course that's penal off the tee, it just doesn't work for 45-year-old Tiger.
So it's not so much that they tiger-proof Torrey Pines, it's that age tiger-proof Torrey Pines, undefeated age tiger-proof Torrey Pines, is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, that's a golf course for John Rahm and Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas. It's not a place for 45-year-old Tiger to dink and dunk his way and outthink the competition. It's just not going to happen at a golf course that's clocking at 7,700 yards.
The one thing I've discovered over this year of us doing podcasts that gets you excited is the opportunity to talk about whatever it is on your menu for the next few weeks. And obviously the big menu is going to be Christmas Day dinner. So I'm going to give you the floor, but there's going to be a time limit. You have 45 seconds before we close out this podcast to tell me what's going to be on the menu on Christmas Day at the Lavner household.
All right. So I had to relegate the duties on Christmas Eve to my mother-in-law. As you know, Rex, beef tenderloin is a very expensive cut of meat. And quite frankly, if she's going to pay for the meal, I did not want to have the pressure of trying to nail that. So she's going to do beef tenderloin on Christmas Eve. On Christmas Day, big day, I'm going to be smoking a ham for lunch. And yes, then for dinner, we're going to be doing some grilled lobster tails, shrimp, scallops with some pasta. And of course, we're probably not going to have a podcast before then. But New Year's Day, of course, as it is every year, is a smoked prime rib.
Is that what it is? That was going to be my quick follow-up. Smoked prime rib.
Yep. And what are you doing since I'm sure you're not going to be participating in this?
No, actually, we're going to do Christmas dinner at our house. You and I talked about this. We played golf a few days ago, and we talked about I'm going to do the steaks over the fire that we talked about. And as we both discussed, I found the key. I don't even know if I want to say the key.
Butter.
No, it's not butter. It's
butter.
Got to be truffle butter.
Butter.
It's truffle butter. And do you know how hard it is to find truffle butter? It's not easy. You can't walk into your local grocery store and get truffle butter. Like, you've got to look.
I'm not sure there's a huge difference between truffle butter and regular butter when it comes to steak.
It's very much a difference. I'll send you pictures on Christmas Day.
What are you asking Santa for Christmas this year? I hope it's a new grill.
It is not a new grill. You tried to talk me into it. You sent me pictures. I'm not getting a new grill. I'm happy with the grill I have. I don't need five of six or seven of them like you do in your house. I'm not going to open up at a restaurant. Eight. That's what you have. You don't have eight in your house. You have eight total in your possession.
Yes. Eight total in my possession. I hope for Christmas you can at least ask for some new glasses, since those feminine ones just are not working for you anymore.
That'll do it for this end of the year edition. Happy holidays from the Grinch, who is Ryan Lavner. That's the Golf Central Podcast. We'll see you next year.